Welcome to this week's edition of Focus Fridays, which is being brought to you by
Hobrins Insurance, Home Siding, Rhodey's IGA, Millersburg Electric, Pomerine Hospital, MRV Siding, and Millersburg Tire.
For Focus Fridays, I'm Melissa Patrick. Joining me today is State Representative Mark Heiner. Thanks, Mark, for coming in today for Focus Fridays and kind of sharing. You've been in the position now for a year.
Yep.
And so you should have a good feel for what it takes to be a state representative in the state of Ohio.
Yeah.
So let's pick your brain and find it out. Let's start with, how do you become a state representative? This is an elected position.
Yep.
So what was the process you had to go through to do that?
So probably the worst part of the process was deciding whether to do it or not. You know, the thought of this isn't something I ever, you know, had on my bingo card of things to do.
No, your background is absolutely nothing to do with politics.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I've followed politics for a long time.
As does most people in radio.
Yeah. And I've sat and watched all the loony things that happen and scratched my head like, what are they thinking?
Doing?
Yeah. Why would they do that? That makes no sense. And, you know, we got to the point Daryl Kick was in the seat and he was termed out, couldn't run anymore. And I had run for a school board race over in Knox County, the district where I live, and ended up losing that race. And, you know, I ran for that because I felt our school board wasn't doing as good a job as they could. I thought they were missing a lot of things, financially, academically, you know, so on and so forth. You know, end up losing that race, and a group of my friends came to me, and when I decided to get into the school board race, they said, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you run for state rep? If you really want to have an impact, go to Columbus. And for whatever reason, I just didn't see it. So they kept coming back to me, and, you know, finally it got to the point where my wife set me down and she said, you know what? I really think you'd be good at this. You should consider this.
And your wife is a very smart woman.
No, and she is. And but she's also usually very passive with me. She doesn't usually, you know, get into me like that, where she's kind of lecturing me a little bit.
Like, you need to do this.
Yeah, she usually doesn't do that. And it got my attention. And it caused me to go back to the people that had been urging me to run. And, you know, I ended up, you know, going to the chair of the county party and talked with him about it. And he said, yeah, I think it'd be a great idea. We'd like you to run. So, you know, you end up at a state level office. It costs a little bit of money. So you gotta do some fundraising. And I hate fundraising out of
it's the
all
worst.
The things. I just do.
There's
not.
Nothing honor, like, I want to say honorable, but I don't know if that's the word. There's nothing that feels good about begging people for money for yourself.
Right. And I'm not good at asking. I'm very independent. I'm not good at asking people for help to begin with.
I understand completely.
And then even much more so asking for money. I'm just not
this
good at that.
This is where we're very alike.
Yeah. But it is a necessary part of the process. To win races takes money. I don't like it, but it's just the way the system works.
And unfortunately,
for all the flaws in the system, and there are many, it's a better system than any other country has. So, you know, until we find a way to make it better, it's the
we
best.
We just roll with it.
The best thing going. So I ended up engaging an election consultant that knew what to do to how to run a race. Because after all, I had just lost a school board race. So I had proven I wasn't very good at it. But I did learn a lot in losing that race. You know, I had underestimated the woman that beat me. Mm-hmm. I didn't think had any chance of beating me, so I focused on the other person. Well, turned out while I was underestimating her, she was just out quietly knocking on doors, talking mm-hmm. to people, building support. And, you know, I did all that, but I obviously didn't do it. I lost by 27 votes. So it wasn't a blowout.
You can
by
tell
any
that
stretch.
You still feel that when you know the exact amount
of
votes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, there's a little bit of competitor in me, but, you know, and I, you know, knocked a few more doors and made a few more phone calls. I'd have probably beat her, but it's okay. She did a pretty good job.
It's not where you were supposed to be.
Correct. So, you know, ended up winning this race and, you know, never having done it before, really, you have no idea what you're doing.
None.
And, you know, term limits brings that on because every 8 years you're going to have a new state representative and a new senator for sure.
Somebody new is coming in.
Because state law requires it. So, you know, you've constantly got new blood coming in. And, you know, it didn't scare me, but, you know, it's a big learning curve. There's a lot to absorb. And I will give the legislature this. They did an orientation that was fantastic. We spent, I think, 3 days down in Columbus meeting with all the people from the different agencies, meeting with the Legislative Service Commission, who is a group of accountants and lawyers and policy people that we turn to when we're writing bills. Mm-hmm. They help us with research. They actually write the bill for us.
You just tell them what you want and they put it in the legalese terms.
Yeah, and it is a much more complicated process than you would think because, you know, you're changing the revised code and sometimes it doesn't just affect one section. Sometimes it'll affect dozens
multiple
of sections. So they have to go through and search all those out and find them and put the appropriate language in. Some of these bills we do are thousands of pages long because it affects so many. It's usually education. Education bills are always long because it affects so many different areas of the revised code. And you got to get it right. You don't want to end it with a conflict that
causes
a problem.
You don't want to be short-sighted.
Correct. So it's important that they're there. Not all states have that. It's funny. I'll tell a little story about we had a request for some legislation, and Oklahoma had done it previously.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, let's look at what Oklahoma did. Why reinvent the wheel if we don't have to? So we got the legislation from Oklahoma, and it was so poorly written. It was full of conflicts and things that were problems.
You're like, we're rewriting the wheel.
And I was just like, they obviously don't have a legislative service commission like we do. So, you know, you get better law because of that. And these folks are scary smart.
Well, anybody who's looked at the ORC, it's not an easy read.
No, it's not. It's very complicated.
Lot.
Yeah, it's very complicated. And, you know, I meet with these folks and they are scary smart and, you know, they know the subject matter well and we're very fortunate to have them.
For sure. Well, we'll learn more about being a state representative in the next segment. This is State Representative Mark Heiner for WKLM's Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick. Welcoming back State Representative Mark Heiner. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays on WKLM. And we kind of learned in the last segment, Mark, how you come to make the decision to be a state rep and you have to go through the whole election process to get there. And I think you stopped right about where you had your orientation and learning how it's got to be a little intimidating going down to Columbus with all those other representatives across the state and just stepping into there and like, I'm going to help change law.
You know, I don't know that I felt that way. It's a new place. I'm still finding places in the Capitol that I had no idea existed. I'll make a wrong turn and end up down a hallway. And, I had no idea this was back
where
here.
Where am I? Did I step into Narnia?
It's a neat building with a lot of nooks and crannies to it. And I'm still finding them. But, you know, that might have been the biggest thing that was intimidating was just finding your way around.
Right.
Figuring out all the, you know, all the different ways to get from one place to another. The state representative's offices are in the Reif Tower, which is on the opposite side of High Street from where the Capitol is. There is a tunnel that goes under the street. So we can, you know, we have the ability to go down and, you know, through that tunnel and get over to the Capitol. So regardless of what the weather
is. Super secret tunnel.
Yeah. It's not all that secret. Anybody can walk through it, but it's open to the public.
And much safer than trying to cross the street in Columbus.
Well, yeah, it's nice because, you know, whatever the weather is, you can get back and forth pretty easily. But figuring out how you get to there. And then there's a tunnel to the Rhodes Tower that I've never been in. But, you know, there's there's a web of things interconnecting all this stuff to try to make it as efficient as possible.
At least something in Columbus is efficient.
Yeah, we could maybe argue how efficient it is, but you know, I spend a lot of time walking. I get in a lot of steps. There are a lot of days where I'll start my day in the office. I'll be over to the Capitol for something, back over to the office, back over to the Capitol. It just, you know, it's a lot of back and forth. Doesn't bother me. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining. I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Now, how often do you have to be in Columbus?
I don't have to be there at all. I mean, is the truthful answer. I could not go to voting session. I could not go to caucus. I could not go to my office at all.
And you could not get reelected.
Exactly. I would never do that, but there's nothing in law that has a requirement for attendance.
I kind of feel like there should be.
There probably should. There was a representative. He has resigned.
Oh.
he I think was only at a third of the voting sessions.
Oh.
And he got reelected.
How?
And his constituents obviously didn't know about it.
Obviously.
I could never do that. I
would feel terrible.
I asked for the job. The voters were kind enough to give it to me.
You're getting paid taxpayer money.
Yeah, I do get paid. I would never. That's not in me. I would never not do that. So we have session. Well, usually caucus meets on Tuesday where we discuss what we're going to do on Wednesday. And then the voting session is on Wednesday. It's always at 2:00. The public is... the gallery in the house is open to the public. You can come down and watch. Anyone is welcome to do that. You don't need to buy a ticket or make a reservation. You can just come down and walk right in and sit and watch
show.
What's going on. Yeah. Sometimes it is a show, depending on the topic of discussion. But, it's a very orderly process. You know, we have an agenda of the bills that we're going to, work on a given day. We always know in advance what they're going to be. I read them before voting on them.
What?
Crazy, isn't it?
Novel
Sometimes
concept.
That's a challenge. The budget is thousands of pages. I will confess, I didn't read every word in the budget, but I looked through the numbers. I just think that's important to do that.
And I don't think people realize how much is actually in a bill. Like, people just imagine it's a piece of paper saying, this is what we want to do, but there's a lot that goes in. You talked about it with the group that helps put them together. Sometimes they're thousands of pages.
But it depends on the bill.
Right.
Sometimes it's a sentence or two, and it's very simple, and there's nothing to it. And you almost feel guilty introducing it and taking the time to put it through the process. It's so simple. But... more often than not, they're multiple pages and they're more complicated.
And sometimes people try to sneak things in and you've got to watch for that.
It's easy to do that in the budget. And there are some good reasons to do that in the budget. Sometimes you might have an issue that everyone's in agreement that you need to make a change, but no one's willing to be the bad guy to make the change.
And to have their name associated with said change.
Right, right. In that instance... it's nice to be able to do that, but it is overused. It's done more often than it should be. And the budget, I'm of the belief that the budget should be the budget. We shouldn't be tucking other things into the budget. That should go through the committee process and
to
hearings.
To make sure it's what it needs to be.
Right, correct. Now, the argument made is the budget goes through a hearing process. And it does,
but is everybody
so
reading
massive.
It?
It is so massive. There are so many things in there. No one person can be an expert on all of them. And we do rely on each other in
like
that
regard.
Like
you do this section, I'll look at this
right.
section.
And it typically focuses around your committee assignments. I'm on agriculture, natural resources, small business, and arts, athletics, and tourism. So I'm more versed in those areas because I'm on those committees. So anything related to those areas comes to our committee. So we hear the testimony. We ask the questions. You know, I'm not on insurance committee. So I don't follow what goes on. So I depend on those folks to help me stay up to speed on those bills and what's happening with them. You know, it really is a well thought out process. You introduce a bill. It gets assigned to a committee. By law, every bill has to have a hearing. They all do. Sometimes they never get another hearing.
Because it's like, no.
Right. If you know,
some bad idea.
Some of the bills that get introduced are silly. Crazy. Yeah, they are just silly. They're done for a political purpose or, you know, someone's got an agenda. So, again, that's part of the process. And, you know, it will come to committee, you know, assuming it's not crazy. You know, it'll have multiple hearings. Every bill is supposed to have three. Sometimes they go quickly. Sometimes they take time.
You need discussion. You need to make sure you understand what you're passing.
And sometimes it takes time to get, you know, people together to come, you know, testify for it or testify against it, whatever, you know, whatever your goal is with that bill. You know, you work your way through the process and ultimately you'll get to a point where the committee will take a vote. And, you know, if the committee votes yes, it'll go to the floor for a vote. If the committee votes no, it dies and it's gone.
It's kind of interesting seeing the whole process, knowing that everything goes through these for the most part.
Yeah.
And so it's important that you do be there.
Yeah.
I don't know how people miss.
Right, right.
That makes no sense.
Right. No, and committees can be difficult because sometimes you'll have conflicts. I'm very lucky. My committees all meet at different times.
Nice.
The only time I have had to jump out of a committee was because I had to testify on a bill that was mine in a different committee that wasn't mine. That happens on occasion. So, you know, you'll see people come and go. And I should share that all of this stuff, every committee session, every House session, all of it is on the Ohio Channel. It's all archived. It's all out there on the website. If you go to ohiochanneli think.org, it might be
something
.gov,
like that.
Might
just be .gov. Look up Ohio Channel.
Yeah, if you Google Ohio
it's
Channel,
where
you'll find
it. The little governor's
and it's,
briefings.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff out there. Bill signings and, you know, anything done in state government is all videotaped and put out there in archive. You can go watch it anytime.
People can see that you're there.
Yeah.
You're doing it.
Yeah.
You're testifying it.
Yeah.
Here's what you're saying. You got nothing to hide.
Yep.
We'll learn more about what goes on in Columbus with State Representative Mark Heiner. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays on WKLM. We are rejoining State Representative Mark Heiner here on Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM. And we've been talking more like an overview of a day in Columbus with, you know, going to committee and things like that. But what all are the responsibilities and the jobs of a state representative? What are you doing outside of just being in committee meetings and on the floor?
Well, the primary function is to write and change law. So, you know, if sometimes these are my ideas, more often than not, they come from constituents. You know, someone will reach out with a problem or a concern.
You do listen.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, the primary focus is writing legislation and following everyone else's legislation to make sure it's not something crazy that we don't want in our district. And, you know, part of the process, again, is, you know, we have abilities to offer amendments. If somebody's got a bill and, you know, maybe I think it's not, maybe a constituent reaches out and says, oh, that's going to be
like,
a problem
no.
for me. You know, you can't do that. You know, I can offer an amendment to make a change, to make it more palatable. Sometimes you can get those done. Sometimes you can't. You know, that all comes to the politics and the lobbying process of it, in having conversations with the other members and, you know, trying to sway them and get them mm-hmm. onto my point of view. But, you know, that's the primary focus. The other piece of it is what I call constituent service and, you know, helping people in the district with a problem, you know. Maybe you're having trouble with a state agency. I had somebody, and I won't use any names, but I had someone that was having trouble with a building permit that mm-hmm. was required from the state of Ohio. They had spent 3 years beating their head against the wall trying to get this project to completion, and they
which
just,
is ridiculous.
It is, and it was a silly bureaucratic error. The way that it got coded, it was a strange building they were building wasn't normal, and it got coded into their system in a way that just brought it to its knees. And, you know, we made some phone calls, had some meetings, got them to go back and look at it, and got them to realize, them being the building, the state building department, we got them to realize what the problem was, and they got it resolved, got their permit issued, and they got their project done. So we do a lot of that, actually. And a lot of times it's just making a phone call for someone.
Because you know who to reach out to.
Right.
And you have those contacts.
We have, every state agency has a liaison that we call from the legislature when we have a problem. If it escalates high enough, I can call a director directly. I try not to do that. I don't do that on the first call. If I don't get anywhere in a little while,
or if it's really important,
sure, I would do that. But it would depend on the severity of the situation, and whether I'm getting my way or not. You know, my job is to work for the district.
Right.
So there are roughly 120,000 people in my district. They're who I work for. I really don't care what anyone else thinks or wants. My job is to work for them. So they come first. And, you know, if I have to argue with the state agency to help get them what they need, I'm going to do that.
You just got to be gung-ho about it.
Well, yeah. And sometimes I get, you know, what I'm looking for, and sometimes I don't.
And that's why you were elected, to
right.
represent the people.
Right.
Hence the name, state representative.
Correct.
There's logic to names sometimes.
No, there is. And since you brought that up, you know, we'll get calls from people. We get a lot of emails. We'll get calls from people that just want us to change stuff.
Just right now.
They just snap my fingers, make it happen. I don't have that ability. The House has 99 members in it. The Senate has 33. And in order to pass a law, we got to get at least half of us on board and in agreement. And it's not easy to do. And quite frankly, you wouldn't want it any other way. You don't want me to have the power where I can just snap my fingers and change things. You want there to be a process that takes some time. I really believe the founders developed our system intentionally so that it would be confrontational and it would take time. That way you filter out the bad ideas and only the good ones get through. And I really think that's an important part of the process, to make sure that you get good legislation and you know, unnecessary things or crazy things don't make it through.
And sometimes it just takes a little talking to realize that, oh, this sounded like a good
right.
idea in theory,
right. Right.
but in practice,
right.
it is not easy. It
right.
is costly. It's not good. It's a good thing we had this discussion and
right.
and break it out.
Right.
You, in many cases in life, you do not want to make rash decisions.
Right.
And in law is one of those things.
Right.
You don't want it to be a drawn out, complicated process that takes 9,000 years.
Well, you want to get it. And, you know, if there's something that's urgent and enough members realize it, things can happen quickly. If enough people are on board, we can do things quickly in the legislature.
Is that documented anywhere that things have been done quickly?
I should have known you were going to ask that. I'm trying to think of an example, and I don't have one off the top of my head, but there were a couple bills this last year that we moved through pretty quickly, just because there was some...
People understood the importance of what needed
right,
to go through.
Right,
right. Or one of those easy ones to easy reads.
Yeah, yeah. If it's important enough and enough people recognize that, we can move quickly. Otherwise, it takes time.
So, yeah, there's no snapping your fingers as much as somebody may want it.
No.
And they may realize, oh, hey, I wanted this, but maybe I don't really want this, once they see the consequences that go along with it.
Correct. And if I'm working on a bill, especially if it's my idea, I try to bounce it off as many people as I can to try to figure out what I'm missing, because I don't know everything.
We only know what we know.
Right. I might think I have a good idea, but after I drill down into it a little bit, you know, I realize, there's too many problems with this. We got to attack this a different way. So, you know, and again, that's all part of the process. It just, sometimes it takes time.
And with that, we're going to take some time here. We'll be back with more with State Representative Mark Heiner. I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM's Focus Fridays. We're going to step back in here with State Representative Mark Heiner for Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick, and we've talked a lot about what you do in Columbus, the committees and the voting on the floor and the working on bills. And a big part of your job, like you mentioned in the last segment, it has to do with the constituents. And when you're working with constituents, it helps to be out in the district.
Absolutely.
And you go out.
I do.
A lot.
That was one thing that my wife and I had a long conversation about as I was deciding whether to do this or not. you know, as she was encouraging me to do it, I reminded her of my personality and how I am. I don't do anything halfway. If I do something, I jump in with both feet. And I said to her, I will not just, you know, we live in Knox County. And I said, I will not just serve Knox County. I said, I also represent Holmes and Coshocton. I said, I will do my best to spend as much time there as I do here. Because it's not, for me, it's not fair to those two counties to not get the same attention that the one I live in does. And it's
because you can't live in all three.
No, you can't. And it's complicated. The House districts are sized based on population. Each district has about 120,000 people in it.
Okay.
Concept of equal representation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're in Franklin County, your district's not very big.
No.
Because there's 120,000 people all
right
crammed
there
into a small area. So you know that, and I'm a little jealous of those representatives because they're, you know, they have one set of county commissioners. They, you know, maybe have one or two cities meetings that they have to attend.
They could probably walk their district.
Yeah, correct. Mine is pretty expansive. It covers almost three counties. I've got, you know, three commissioners meetings that I attend on a regular basis. I've lost count of how many villages are in my district, and there's 60 some townships. So it's not feasible for me to get to township meetings, but I try to get to as many things as I can.
And you come to events.
And it's, you know, to me, it's important to be in the district, talking to the people I represent. They're going to yell at me sometimes, but that's okay. That's part of the job.
That's how you learn.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I need to know what your concerns are.
What has you upset?
You know, I've got my own set of ideas for what we need to do in state law. And some of this is, you know, when you're choosing a candidate to serve you, you look at them and you decide which one best shares your values. And I think for the most part, you know, I do that with this district pretty well. But again, I don't know everything. There's 120,000 different opinions on how we should do things. So I want to hear from as many people as I can and understand their concerns and their needs and, you know, do what I can to fulfill those.
So you're out and about, and like you said, you're going to the meetings, you go to countless public events and things, and be around the people. You're not just mingling with other elected officials. You're at the fair, you're everywhere.
And part of it is I want the local elected folks to know me so that when they have a problem, they're comfortable calling and having a conversation about it. And that is an issue sometimes. A lot of times people are afraid to reach out because they don't know somebody.
And they're like, oh, is this elected official in Columbus? They think you're out of reach, and you try to be a lot more reachable than.
And it gets harder. You know, the bigger the office gets, the harder it is to pay attention to everyone. That's just the nature of the beast. And then, you know, you have a large rural district like mine. It's harder to stay in contact with everybody. But I do the best I can with the time I have.
And that's where your aides come in, too. They come out into the district
and
as well.
And he does. Yeah, my aide, Jake, comes out on
Jake
occasion.
Yep.
He's been out to a handful of things out in district.
Because you are one person.
Correct.
And you can't always be in
multiple places. And he's usually the one that asks to come out. Not all aides do that. Some of them just want to stay in the office in Columbus and never come into the district. He wants to genuinely know what's going on here.
What helps him with his job?
Correct. You're correct.
I mean, to know what you're researching for and who.
Yep.
It can only make him better at his job.
Yep.
And it's good that you have an aide that understands that.
Correct.
But it is very important to make it back. As much as you need to be there voting and working, it's just as important to be back here.
Right.
And
you know what? Every time I come out into the district, I learn something from somebody. Sometimes it's not good, but that's okay. That goes with it too. Sometimes it's a problem that has to be solved, but
like,
that's okay. That's part of what the job is. So.
Exactly. It's solving problems.
Yeah.
Making laws and solving problems.
Yeah.
And you're never going to run out of either.
No, you are not.
And so how many miles do you think you've logged going in just that first year
I'm driving about 30,000 miles a year at the moment.
A lot.
It's a lot.
But I'm sure.
And that's my car. We don't get mileage reimbursement, and this kind of surprises me, but we are not allowed to deduct any expenses related to the job on our taxes.
I didn't know that either.
It all comes out of pocket. We do get reimbursed for one trip to Columbus if we have session. One trip per week, because we only have session once a week.
Okay.
So I can get reimbursed for that mileage, but that's it. And there are a lot of weeks I'm in Columbus more than once.
So that would explain why some representatives don't maybe make it out to their districts as often.
Oh, yeah. No, and I feel sorry for David Thomas and Sarah Fowler Arthur that represent Lake and Ashtabula counties that are in the far northeast corner of the state. It takes them 3.5 hours to get to Columbus from where they live.
Ugh.
There was one morning I was working on a bill with Sarah, and I got in my car at 7 o'clock to head to Columbus for the day. And she and I had a meeting, I think at 9 o'clock in Columbus. And I got in the car and called her. We talked while we were driving down. Mm-hmm. And I realized she had already been driving for an hour and a half. She was driving before I got out of bed. And I thought, man, that's awful. They do that all the time. So it is, I mean, that's a challenge, but it's, you know, they don't complain about it. They do it, but I feel sorry for them. I'm close enough. I usually go home.
Right.
I think I've spent the night in Columbus a couple of times, either if I have something very early in the morning or something runs very late at night, but typically I go home. I don't want to stay down there. I'd rather be in district.
And a lot of times you hear it talked about your local government, they live right where they're representing. And you see a little more separation as you go out into state and federal government because you're representing in Columbus. So you're not, and you have a bigger district.
Yep.
And so it's good that you're trying to make sure that you're out and about.
Right. And the truth is, you know, everyone's got a representative and a senator. The Senate district is bigger, so it's even harder for them to get out into the district and you know, spend time in all the different areas. So I kind of view it as my office is the smallest of the state level offices. I kind of view it as part of my responsibility to kind of help fill that void.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be a lot of times I'll have a conversation with somebody and I might call Senator Brenner and say, hey, you need to be aware of this.
Right.
So that he can be in the loop. So we talk frequently and, you know, I think that's important too. You want to, because we do need to work together on things. Things that leave my chamber go to his and vice versa. And, you know, we need to help each other get these things through.
Exactly. Well, we'll learn more here as we continue chatting with State Representative Mark Heiner. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays on WKLM. We are coming back here with State Representative Mark Heiner on Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick with WKLM. And part of what goes on in the office and how you learn about writing bills or doing things is working with lobbyists. And there are a lot of opinions on lobbyists, good and bad.
Most of them bad.
Most of them bad. It's like we've talked.
Yep.
But kind of share with the folks some good and even some bad that have to do, because it's one of those things you do work with.
Yep.
As a representative or a senator in state government.
I probably talk
federal
to
government.
Probably talk to a lobbyist every day.
And so how can working with those folks be helpful for you?
So it's, you know, it's not all bad, the whole lobbying effort. I think the important thing is that it's transparent, that everyone's above board in what they're doing. You know, every lobbyist is representing someone that's trying to get something changed or something removed or something. And maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. I mean, that's what the process is for. My experience with lobbyists is that, you know, most of the ones that I interact with, you know, seem to be pretty good. They're not out, you know, doing bad things. Now, part of that's just the nature of the committees I'm on, agriculture and natural resources. You don't have a lot of bad actors in that space.
Right.
Those are all pretty down-to-earth people. But, you know, a lobbyist will, I'll give you an example. I've got a bill that I'm working on that I took it to committee and testified, and the chairman of the committee kind of changed the scope on it for me, and he wanted to take it down a different path, and you know, he wanted to try to use the financial network to flush out the problem instead of, you know, doing it through regulation like I had proposed. And there was a lobbyist that saw that testimony, and he called me and he said, "I represent MasterCard. Would you like to have a conversation with them about how this may or may not work?" And I said, "Yes, I would." So we had a conference call the other day with the government relations people for MasterCard, and they walked me through how they could be helpful and how they can't be helpful. And I'm not a financial services guy. I don't know all the nuts and bolts behind that. Their lobbyist connected me with someone within their organization that was able to help me understand how that process works from their perspective. So now we can kind of decide whether we want to go down that avenue or not. So my experience is a lot of times they are helpful in explaining issues and things. I always like it when I can hear from one on both sides of an argument.
Right.
So I can
Which
get,
is balanced.
So I can get both sides of it because, you know, chances are one of them's lying to me or both of them are lying to me.
You always got it. There's always two sides to the cookie.
Sure. And
not both have frosting.
I'm pretty good at figuring out when I'm lied. I've got two kids. I'm pretty good at figuring out when I've been lied to. Had a lot of experience in that. Not a lot of experience, but
it's a good thing your kids are not local.
Right. Neither one of them live within the range of this station. So, you know, a lot of times they are helpful. Sometimes I avoid them like the plague. It just depends on who it is. You get to know all of them because they're around the state house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I meet with a lot of them. A lot of times they are instrumental in getting a piece of legislation done. They will, if they want to get behind it, they will help lobby other members and pull strings and try to help get things done. So it's, you know, it's like anything. There's good and bad with it. If you can figure out how to use it for good, it's helpful. And mm-hmm. and that's what I try to do. I'm not a real controversial member in the House. I'm not, you know, chasing all kinds of crazy concepts. You know, I'm not making accusations at people. I go down there, I do the work that the people ask me to do, and I turn around and I go home. So I don't, you know, I'm not stirring up a lot of trouble. So I don't draw a lot of that type of
attention.
You're
not engaging in the conflict.
Right. So, you know, so those sorts of lobbyists don't seek me out because I'm not going to participate.
He ain't no player.
Yeah, I'm not going to participate in whatever it is they're trying to stir up.
So it's one of those necessary things of government.
It is. I mean, it, you know,
as long as it's done in the proper manner.
And again, when you get, you know, as you climb the ladder of legislature, you know, at the county level, so, you know, you can go to your commissioner's meeting, sit right across from them in the same room and pound your fist on the table and lobby for what you want. That's harder to do at the state level. It's not impossible. Mm-hmm. If you call my office, there's a lady lives here in Holmes County that had a concern and she wanted to come down. I said, "Sure, come on down." She made the trip down, came to my office. We sat and talked about her issue. And, you know, I'm happy to do that with anyone. Anyone who wants to come down, you're more than welcome. As long as you live within my district. I'm not gonna meet from people from other districts.
You're stepping on toes then.
Not all representatives will do that. That's just me. I think that's important. So
you were elected by the people. They correct. Should be able to talk to you.
Correct. But, you know, sometimes an issue is big enough. You know, this property tax is one of them. You know, it that problem will not be solved by any one person, and there will certainly be lobbyists involved in it.
Most certainly.
Yeah, and some of it'll be good and some of it'll be bad. You know, but they will help, you know, to drive the process and, you know, drive the focus, and, you know, we'll just have to watch how that goes. But, you know, there's a lobbyist involved in almost every bill. It's rare that there isn't.
Yeah, well, we'll talk here in this next last segment about some bills you have coming up.
Okay.
And this was State Representative Mark Heiner for WKLM's Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick on WKLM. And we're back for one last time here with State Representative Mark Heiner. I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM's Focus Fridays. We've been learning all about what goes into being a state representative. And part of being a state representative is introducing legislation. And you have some that you're working on to introduce this year.
There's a handful coming. I want to talk real quickly about one that I worked on last year. It was House Bill 59, which is state licensure review. The General Assembly is required every third year to review a third of the state's agencies' licenses that they issue. So, you know, we look at them and decide whether the fees they charge are appropriate, is the license necessary, so on and so forth. And this is the fourth time we've done it. So every agency has been through it once. This was the first year. The group we reviewed last year, this was their second go-round, so it's smoothed out a little bit. But Rep. Fowler Arthur and I, you know, worked on that legislation, and it took a lot of time.
I can only imagine how time-consuming
that
was.
Yeah, because you had to dig through all these different agencies and look at all these things and talk to people, and it, you know, they all went through committee hearings and all that, and it we were able to make some changes, get some things, reduce some fees, reduce some license costs, which, you know, ultimately flows back to the consumer in lower costs, theoretically. You know, we compare things to states around us. We compare to states similar size to us, try to find the right balance for all of that. That was a big undertaking last year. And quite frankly, that kept me from doing a lot of the things that I'm going to be doing this year because there are only so many hours in a day. But I've got a bill introduced that would prioritize American-made iron over foreign. We already do that for steel. I don't know why iron's not included, but we're trying to include that in there.
Yeah, that would only make sense.
You know, to me, we should always do that. And right. And in Ohio, if the state of Ohio is buying things that are made in Ohio, that should be prioritized as well.
Because that helps people in Ohio.
Correct. Somebody's going to keep a job. Somebody's going to pay some tax. That's good. I'd rather spend the money here than in another state if we can. We've got a bill that creates a linked deposit program for the defense industry. With Anduril moving into Pickaway County, mm-hmm. that development is going to be massive.
And huge.
Everyone has considered that Intel project a big deal.
That's
going to be child's play compared to what's going to happen to Anduril. I've met with their team. Mm-hmm. They've shared a little bit about what they have in mind. I can't share any of that, but it's going to be big. This first facility that they're putting together is the tip of the iceberg. So there's going to be a lot of companies come to support them, and the linked deposit program provides a funding mechanism to help them with low interest loans. Another Rep. Matthews and I, Ty Matthews, there's two Matthews in the House, Ty Matthews from up in Findlay, he and I have introduced a bill to create a state government efficiency commission.
Efficiency?
Yeah,
in government?
Now, hold on. I hate commissions. It's where ideas go to die.
Essentially.
So I don't like commissions, but I am troubled at all the waste I see in state government.
So much waste.
It is everywhere. And it should be getting caught in other places.
It's not.
But it isn't. So while I don't like commissions, I want to see us do something to try to pinpoint those things.
Occasionally they're that necessary evil.
And snag them and try to stop them. And I don't know if this is the best way to do it. I don't have a better idea at the moment. So this is what we're pursuing. We'll see where this goes, and we'll see whether it can be effective or not.
Mm-hmm.
It won't have any authority really to do anything other than to identify it and make it public and, you know, try to get whichever agency is responsible for it to correct it.
Take the teeth.
Yeah. This bill's a little disturbing. We had a situation in the city of Mount Vernon that's in my district. They had a registered child sex offender with one of the little children's library boxes on his lawn.
That's a no.
It turns out there is nothing in state law that prevents that.
Yeah.
There will be soon.
Good.
And we've linked that. We had another municipality express concerns about video cameras at public swimming pools.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, any kind of public camera is, you can request that publicly. All you got to do is
public
call, file a request, and they got to give you that video. So the concern is you've got children and women in bathing suits.
Bits.
And the concern was that, you know,
those folks could obtain those videos.
A predator could obtain that video, or an ex-husband or whatever. So we've added that into it. That's fairly uncontroversial. That will likely pass this year. I've got a bill that is controversial. I introduced a bill that will help prevent fraud in ticket sales.
Which is, anybody who's bought a concert ticket knows what a hot mess
and,
the concert ticket or sports tickets or any tickets.
And quite honestly, I didn't know. I've never had a problem. I didn't know how widespread this was until I introduced it. And I had people come out of the woodwork with stories that they've had with ticket fraud. And so I didn't, it's a much bigger problem than even I realized. But, you know, we're working through that process now. I've testified in committee on it. We're waiting on the next hearing for it. But there's been a lot of feedback on that. Of course, the ticket resellers have chimed in. They don't like it at all.
Of course not, because they're making bank.
Correct. It will, you know, put burdens on them.
Oh no.
Well, and that's normally, I don't like putting regulations on business, but if you're defrauding consumers, you got regulation coming your way. I'm amazed at what people pay to go to football games and concerts.
They're charging for the U.S. Open or whatever it is that's coming up is...
Yeah.
I don't understand it,
but that's people's rights to spend their money as they see fit, so...
It is, but they should not have to worry about the problems that are going on.
Correct. Correct. And one of the things I've learned through this process is some of these resellers go out and they sell tickets that they don't have possession of yet.
Correct.
They're making an assumption that they can acquire that ticket somehow. And
then people buy the ticket, they get to the show, and there's no ticket.
Right. Well, a responsible operator pulls it back and doesn't issue the ticket. But, you know, not all of them do. And there are, you know, in this world of internet fraud, you know, you've got, you know, actors from overseas building websites to mirror a Ticketmaster site or some other, and
we saw that with our own, you know, theater here in Holmes County.
Yeah,
defrauding people like that.
Yeah.
So
it's happening all the time. We're going to try to put some guardrails around it, and I'm sure we won't stop it. There's always somebody
who's
looking for a loophole, working an angle, figuring out a way to defraud people. But you know, we'll do what we can today. And if we need to do more, we'll do more. Some things that I'm working on that are coming, I'm going to have a bill that will change the way educational service center elections work. Right now, this is kind of crazy the way this works. So if your school district is a local district, you are required to participate in an ESC, which is essentially a countywide school district. If you are a city or exempted village district, it's your choice whether you participate or not. Here's the rub. If you are a city district, you are not allowed to vote on the board members of the ESC.
But if you're participating in it...
The founders called that taxation without representation.
Yeah, that's a problem.
I agree. I think it is a problem. And then, you know, that came up on this last election cycle. There was a problem with Clear Fork School District that spans Knox and Richland counties. And then we started digging into it, and it got a little deeper. It turns out that in state law, for election purposes, the ESC ends at the county boundary.
Oh.
So we had people in Knox County voting on candidates that weren't going to represent them on the ESC. Richland County was voting on a different set of candidates. Absolutely crazy. Needs to get fixed. So
yeah.
I've got a bill that will fix that. It will change it so that each district can choose whether to participate or not. So if you're a local district and you don't want to participate, if
There's
you can
no
do those services on your own, you don't have to belong to an ESC. But if you choose to participate in an ESC,
you get to vote.
You will have one representative from your district chosen by the voters in your district that will represent you on that board. To me, that's a much more fair way. Right now, the representatives could all come from one school district, mm-hmm. so you'd have a lopsided board. So trying to provide some balance. I'm working on a concept. Haven't sent this to drafting. That the ESC bill I just talked about, I have that. It's written. It's ready to file. It's out for co-sponsor right now with the other members. I'm working on a concept for a way to provide an incentive to report fraud.
We all work on incentives. It's how things get done.
No, exactly. And there's a lot of accusations out there about fraud right now.
What?
And crazy, right?
Ooh.
So in having conversations with other people in statewide office, there's claim that oftentimes people don't report this stuff. They're aware, but they don't report.
They don't know how, it's scary.
As an elected official, I'm required by law to report it. If I become aware of fraud, I have to report that or I'm violating the law.
Do all the elected officials in the state and federal government know that?
Probably not. So I'm working on a concept that would provide, if you can identify fraud and report it and it's confirmed and recovered, you would collect 10% of it. So it would provide a financial incentive to find these things and report them.
And the key is for them to be legit and valid.
Right.
So people fraud, and then
you can't, you're not going to be able to call the auditor's office and say, you know, I found $100,000 worth of fraud, write me a check for 10 grand. It's going to have to go through a process. It'll take time. They're going to have to confirm it. They're going to have to find it, and they're going to have to recover it. Because I don't want the taxpayers passing out money that wasn't recovered.
Right.
So
because they've already lost that money.
Correct. And then, you know, a big topic that's popular or unpopular, I guess, depending on your viewpoint right now, is the unclaimed funds account in the state government. The whole concept stuns me. So I went and looked in the database and found that I had a claim out there from years ago. Verizon Wireless. Oh, mine was 12 cents.
Well, woo!
11 cents.
Don't spend it all in one place.
Well, I looked at that and I thought, I'm going to file a claim and see what happens. I filed the claim.
You got a check for 11 cents.
They granted it. No, I got a check for 12 cents because of interest.
Nice.
It cost the taxpayers of the state of Ohio 59 cents to mail me that check for 12 cents. That is absolutely ridiculous. We need to put some guardrails on that. And I don't know what the threshold is, but there needs to be a threshold. $5, $10, I don't know what it is. But if it's less than that, it's just going to be gone.
It's a bill wash.
Yeah. And we'll figure that out. But more importantly than that, I want to try to find a way, if we got creative, between the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, who mm-hmm. has driver's license data on almost everyone in the state, and the Department of Taxation, where you file your tax return, if the unclaimed funds group had access to those databases, they could probably find most of the people in that unclaimed funds account.
That would be work.
Well, exactly. So I'm going to try to find a way to push that concept. I don't know whether I'll be able to get it done or not, but I want to try to find a way to force the state to find those people and send it to them. The process is awful. The claim that I filed was on a post office box that I had decades ago. And the only reason I was able to get the claim was because I keep electronic copies of everything. I had an old bill with that PO box on mm-hmm. it that I could prove it was mine. Most people toss that stuff every month. Had I not had that documentation, I wouldn't have been able to have claimed that money.
So you are also a paperwork hoarder.
Yeah. Well, I do it electronically. I don't keep paper anymore, but if you want to audit me, have at it. I've got documentation for everything.
Well, you've got quite a slate of legislation on your plate here coming into 2026.
Yeah, and none of this, you know, we didn't talk about property tax. There'll be property tax things to work on. There'll be all sorts of other things that are going to come up over the course of the year. I'll be chasing all of them.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to stop in and chat about what you do as a state representative.
Happy to do it.
That was State Representative Mark Heiner here on WKLM's Focus Fridays. And for WKLM, I'm Melissa Patrick. Focus Fridays has been brought to you by Hovrens Insurance, Home Siding, Rohde's IGA, Millersburg Electric, Pomerene Hospital, MRV Siding, and Millersburg Tire. Don't forget to catch Focus Fridays each and every Friday in the 9 a.m. hour. If you happen to miss an episode of Focus Fridays, you can go to the website, WKLMFM.com, and click on the Focus Fridays icon and the episode that you missed. In the next edition of Focus Fridays, we focus in on Holmes County District Public Library Director Paula Ciccinetti. It's all here on your hometown radio, 95.3 WKLM.